We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Hello, everyone. I'm Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. On Perpetual Chess, I have weekly conversations with chess players, personalities, authors, and adult improvers about their lives, their careers, and about chess improvement. Perpetual Chess is brought to you through the generosity of its Patreon and PayPal supporters. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. Hey everyone, welcome back to Perpetual Chess. We have an exciting guest for you this week talking about an exciting event. But first of all, I wanted to apologize that this is coming out a little late this week, but I think it'll be worth it, as you'll hear why in a minute. Another thing, we're going to do a rare two-part episode. So in this episode, my guest and I will be discussing one of the biggest events of the chess year, as we'll introduce in a minute. And then this guest, of course, Daniel King, as you saw in the title description, has a varied career with a lot to talk about beyond that. So what we'll do is we'll have him back in a matter of weeks to discuss the rest of his career. But for this one, he's been doing an excellent series on his very popular YouTube channel, Power Play Chess, previewing the candidates. He is jetting off to Ekaterinburg for the tournament itself to be one of the announcers. And of course, beyond that, he's a well-known author, YouTube presenter, announcer, journalist, grandmaster. He's won some tournaments in his day, of course, co-first in the Sydney Open, champion of the Bunrattie Masters, and now he is joining us on the show. Grandmaster Daniel King, thank you for coming on.
Hi, Ben. Nice to speak to you.
So you've been super busy, and you're only going to get busier, right? You're heading off to Russia in a couple days?
Yeah, as ever, before you go away, a million things to do, and you know, I'm pretty excited about the tournament. For me, the candidates is always a highlight. It really is. Every 2 years we have it now. And really, you know, there are some players who I feel have been working towards this tournament and only this tournament over the past couple of years. For example, Anish Giri, I think that's been the only thing in his mind over the past couple of years, actually.
Yeah, you mentioned, you've been putting out an excellent preview series on your YouTube channel. I'm a big fan of your channel. I've been a Patreon supporter of your content for a while. And I saw you mentioned in the Anish Giri preview that you felt like he wasn't revealing his best stuff recently. So we'll get to that, because if you're up for it, Daniel, I'd kind of like to take it player by player, do like a truncated version of what you've been doing on your YouTube channel, minus the chess games. And I, of course, encourage listeners to check out the actual previews that Grandmaster King has been doing. But before we do that, Daniel, we got to start with the big breaking news in the chess world. So regarding the candidates, but just to set the scene for any listeners who don't know, you've probably heard us talk about it before here on this show and elsewhere in the chess media landscape, but March 15th to April 5th, Ekaterinburg, Russia, double round robin tournament with 8 participants. And of course, the winner of this tournament will be challenging Magnus Carlsen if we're not in some sort of global quarantine come November and December. So that's the big background that we've all been aware of. But the breaking news, of course, was that Grandmaster Timur Radjabov recently withdrew, and suddenly Maxime Vachier-Lagrave, who a lot of people felt should have been in the candidates to begin with, is riding in on his white horse to join the tournament. So, Daniel, what was your reaction when you heard this news?
Well, of course, slight surprise. But given the climate we're in, in some ways, not totally surprised that one of the players, or possibly some, there would be some issue. And obviously, FIDE are very keen to be absolutely certain the tournament is going ahead, and they issued an ultimatum. I respect Radjabov's decision. You can't play a decent game of chess if, in the back of your mind, you have some kind of doubt. And I think he was right to ask for guarantees. And if he felt that those guarantees, weren't satisfying him, then he was right to withdraw. Now, obviously, the other players feel that everything's okay. And as far as I understand, there are going to be medical checks and, people will be checked as they're entering into the playing hall. And so, I think it's okay, basically. But if Radjabov wasn't happy, then he was right to withdraw. So I completely respect his decision.
Yeah, it's a tricky issue. There's been a lot of, I've seen people arguing online for either side. Of course, there's a vocal contingent online who says the whole concerns about COVID-19, the coronavirus, are overblown. But as you say, it's a personal decision. Radjabov has a family, and he needs to do what he thinks is best for his career and his family, and that should be respected. And of course, there's a bright side to it, in that a lot of people felt like Maxime Vachier-Lagrave should be in the tournament to begin with. And he wrote a nice little blog post. He seems excited to play. He does not seem in any way bothered by the circumstances under which he's getting in. So it's exciting to have a player of his caliber jumping in.
No, I mean, I'm really pleased for Maxime. I think he did have a good call to actually get into the tournament. So it's great. And, he has been in the top 10 in the world for the past 4 years. Won the Sinkfield Cup in 2017. Well, he should be a candidate.
Yeah. Many people have been arguing that for a long time. And as you mentioned in the preview that I was able to just watch before we started recording, Daniel, because I know you just released it today, but I saw you mentioned that, of course, this is Maxime Vachier-Lagrave's first candidates.
Yes.
Which is a bit of a surprise, given the fact that he is 29 years old, and that, of course, he's so strong, and he's a perennial top 10 player.
Yeah, but I mean, you could also argue that, well, he's had his chances. There are various routes into the candidates. And, if he couldn't cut it, then he doesn't deserve to be there. So I think, it's just how things are. The FIDE have their rules, and they have methods of qualification, and those rules are set out. So there we are.
Yeah, I was very clearly in that camp. It's unfortunate, and you'd like to see him, but as you say, he knew what needed to be done. The World Cup, the opportunity was there before him. So I'm with you, but anyway, I'm just glad that the field is set, and it's starting in a few days. You're leaving in a few days, I'm sure. So I just hope there's no more issues. I mean, the news flow is so fast lately, in the broader world as in the chess world.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel the same. I'm very excited about the tournament, but frankly, I'm nervous as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard not to be. And then, of course, even if we get through this, we have to worry about the World Championship being able to go on as scheduled. It just seems hard to plan anything in this environment.
Well, I mean, at least the World Championship, that's a very long way off. But actually, there's the Olympiad to think of.
Oh, yeah, that's...
Which is a more serious thing.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
I didn't say more serious, but I mean in terms of the number of players.
Yeah,
but,
and the logistics.
At the moment, we have the World Senior Championships taking place in Prague. And the Czech government have just issued a statement saying that sporting events or cultural events with over 100 players should not take place. Now, there are currently 400 players playing in Prague in the middle of the tournament.
And it's, as you say, a senior tournament, no less, which is, of course, a higher risk population. Mm. Hopefully everyone comes through healthy and we're able to put on this event. It's a tough situation for FIDE. FIDE is always gets criticized a lot, sometimes justifiably, but in this case, there's no ideal solution for them in terms of what to do about staging the tournament and, as you say, staging bigger events like the Olympiad later this year.
Yeah, I mean, they have, you know, put in place, pretty stringent checks, so as far as I understand. So I think, you know, we have to rely on that.
Yeah, and this one with 8 participants, as FIDE said, I mean, it should be manageable. 8 young and healthy participants, so presumably healthy. So, Daniel, if you're up for it, I'd like to just break down the players a little bit. But first, sure. First, I'd like to take a break to hear from Chessable. Guys, I wanted to let you know about Chessable's latest offering, the Black Lion by Grandmaster Simon Williams, aka the Ginger GM. What's the Black Lion, you ask? It's a modern version of the Philidor defense with what Simon calls a risky version or a safe and solid lion. Simon has been working on a video course to go along with it that's over 13 hours long. It's on sale now, so if you're looking for a lion against 1E4 or if you're just a fan of the Ginger GM, go to Chessable.com and check it out. So, Daniel, before we get into just a quick discussion of every player, I wanted to read a question from friend of the podcast, I am Kari Christensen, although really it's more of a, I mean, you'll hear what he has to say. So Kari says, it's not as much a question as a comment to Daniel King before the interview about the candidates tournament. When you read or listen to predictions about the candidates, it will often sound as if these fantastic players have at least a total of 200% chance to win, because it's much more convenient and easy to praise than to be realistic. So my message to Daniel is, besides going through all the participants, which I'm sure you can do in a both interesting and brilliant way, please add a percentage chance to win the tournament, and the number should only add up to 100, smiley face.
Oh, my word. I mean, I find that so difficult.
Yeah.
I prefer to give strengths and weaknesses of the players. And, I'm not a gambler.
Yeah.
You know, I flutter the odd fiver now and again. But basically, I'm not a serious gambler, and I don't look into odds and that kind of thing. And, I'm going to find that really difficult.
Yeah,
I'll provide the strengths and weaknesses. Ben, if you want to put a number to it, you're welcome.
Well, here's what I did. I had a feeling you might say that, just because, first of all, that's a challenging request from I am Christensen. And the other thing is, you're announcing the event, and sometimes that can make one feel a little bit like they shouldn't just like say Alexenko can't win it or something when you're gonna be announcing it.
Precisely.
So, and the other thing I did is I looked up the odds on Unibet. There actually is a betting market on Unibet in the UK. So rather than have you sit here and hem and haw and dodge my questions about the percentage odds, I'll just, when I read the introduction, I'll also include the Unibet odds, and then you can just talk about the players more generally. One thing I'll point out, as someone who has been a professional gambler in his life, is the Unibet odds, even these add up to like 113% or something, but you know, the casino has to get paid. That's in the right ballpark, at least.
Okay, this sounds like a good deal.
Excellent. So we'll take them in alphabetical order by last name. So we will begin with Grandmaster Kiro Alexenko from Russia, age 22, rating 2698, world ranking number 39, Unibet odds 1.2%. So, Daniel, for those who don't know GM Alexenko, and he's probably the least known in the field, what could you tell us about this young man?
1.2%. I'm just
very precise, right?
Yeah, really precise. Not 1.3. Wow. Right. So he was announced as the wild card by the Russian Chess Federation after his result at the FIDE Chess.com Grand Swiss tournament in the autumn, where he was actually third on tiebreak. Well, you know, he's a young guy. He's 22 years old, and he doesn't have much experience at the elite level. I think that's one thing to note, that, you know, he's come through the ranks in Russia, which is pretty amazing in itself, that, you know, that's a chess education. But I think he's a real dark horse, because what I've seen over the years is that a lot of players who suddenly start playing in elite tournaments, the top guys don't actually know how to handle them very well because they haven't seen much of their chess. So, for example, we have Alireza Firuzja at the moment, who is just starting to play big tournaments. And I think the top players haven't quite got a handle on how to face him at the board. And so I think, let's turn it around. The top players, the other players and the candidates, I think won't have it easy against him. I think it's going to take time for them to kind of aim and fire, if you see what I mean. He says that he prefers complexity to simplification. Well, that might be so, but for me, when I see his style, he has that kind of formal style, which is so typical of Russians. You know, he doesn't like to play with an unsound pawn structure. You know, he does things correctly, and that can lead to complex situations, of course, but there's still something very responsible about his play. I think it would be extremely unlikely if he won. But we might get to a situation where the top players, you know, they might be targeting him. And it could be that their results against him will determine the winner. So obviously he has a big part to play in the tournament.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And being that he's the youngest participant, that always, I'm always on the lookout for the young gun. So, you know, 22 in chess, that's middle age these days, but still he's young enough to be dangerous. Okay.
Definitely. Yeah.
And next up, Grandmaster Fabiano Caruana from the USA, age 27, rating 2842. Of course, the number two in the world, the former world championship finalist, played Magnus Carlsen in 2018, as listeners very likely know. And his Unibet odds are listed at 45%.
45.
I like that I'm surprising you with these odds that you don't have prior. I mean, of course, they're not shocking you, I'm sure. But
no, but I find 45 interesting, actually. I would have, well, there you go. Having said that, I know next to nothing about betting. I'd have put that one up a bit.
Wow, that's quite an endorsement. 45 is very high when you have a field of 8 players.
Is that high?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Maybe I've got it wrong. That shows how completely clueless I am about
that. Well, you'll hear as you hear the other players, because when someone like Grishuk only has a 12% chance, ooh, you know, like... But I hear what you're saying. I mean, Fabiano is just... He's... this side of Magnus Carlsen, he's seemingly invincible.
He's playing so well at the moment. I think what would impress me about his performance in the Tata Steel tournament was that he plays so naturally at the moment. It's like it's not a big deal, you know. It feels as though he's just in the flow. You know, when he had already won the tournament with a round spare, and he could have just halved out, or, you know, played very quietly or whatever, but he just kept pressing. You know, it wasn't some kind of do or die thing. He just kept pressing, just kept playing. It's like, oh yeah, it's another day at the office. Oh yeah. You know, it just, nothing feels like a big deal for him. Gets a bad position. Oh, just keeps playing good moves against Anand. I mean, mostly he didn't get bad positions, but Yeah, it just feels so natural at the moment. And he has to be the clear favorite. You just look at his live rating, you know, 28.42 compared to Ding, who must be the number two seed.
Yes.
Ding 28.05. Now that is a chunk. That is a chunk ahead. So Fabi has to be the number one seed.
Yeah, and he's got the experience and the killer instinct. So
even
at 45%, I think that would not be a bad bet. Okay, next up, Grandmaster Anish Giri from the Netherlands, 25 years young, 2763 rating, world rank currently number 11, although of course he's been higher, the champion of Twitter. What can you tell us about Grandmaster Giri, Daniel?
Well, as I said, it feels as though this has been his focus in qualifying for the candidates over the past 2 years. He didn't play in 2018 in the Berlin candidates. He wasn't so far off qualifying then, but it feels as though this has been his focus. When he had, you know, he managed to get this high rating in January 2019, and basically he has nursed this rating. You know, he played by the rules, and you can't blame him for that. And that's how he qualified. But I think, you know, when it means so much to him, he's, you know, he's been preparing for this for such a long time. You know, his result in the Tata Steel tournament, for example, in January, I think it's completely irrelevant. It just showed that his mind was on the candidates.
Right.
Nothing more. He's not going to give any prep away. Although he's rated number 11 in the world, I think he has a decent chance. And the reason I say that is that very often these candidate tournaments, the winning score is not very high. You know, over a 14-round tournament, we're not talking 10 out of 14. It could be that plus three wins the tournament. It's possible. You know, 8.5, maybe 9 out of 14 could win the tournament. Now, in those circumstances where Anish is very hard to beat, as we know, and he nicks wins off players. You know, I'm thinking back to Vichy's performance in 2014, when he did something similar. Vichy nursed his wins over the entire tournament and, you know, made solid draws and then, you know, scored another win. Suddenly he was on plus three. And basically the other players took points off each other. You know, it could happen if things go right for him. So I would not dismiss Anish Giri's chances at all.
Yeah, we know he'll be incredibly prepared. So it's just a question of when he gets those chances, can he convert them and will it be enough?
Well, I'd say, you know, he's been working at that. And very tough guy.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And did I say his odds are 8% according to Unibet?
Really?
Yeah.
Do you know what? I think, well, as I said, I'm not a gambling man, but 8% sounds ridiculously low odds to me. High odds, low odds. You know what I'm saying.
Well, as Kari Christensen would point out, that means that someone, if he's underpriced, someone has to be overpriced. I won't put you on the spot, but just a friendly reminder.
Okay, I'm just trying to understand gambling here. Yeah, this is an education. Thanks for chatting, Ben. But 8% odds mean that basically if he ran the tournament 100 times, he would win 8 of them.
That's right, yeah.
That to me sounds like not a bad bet.
Yeah, it does. It does sound low for someone who's been number three in the world, young enough to, 25, still on the upward slope.
Definitely.
Oh, so it'll be interesting. Okay, so
I just want to add. Sorry, just one final thing.
Of course,
it's just that over the last couple of days, he seems to have been a little bit more active on Twitter.
Yes, he does.
Nothing for a long time, and suddenly he's active again. And I thought, okay, this is a guy who's pretty relaxed. Just saying.
Yeah, it's a good point. not active on Twitter is our next participant, Grandmaster Alexander Grishuk, although of course I wish he were active on Twitter. Russian, age 36, oldest player in the field, rating 2777, current world rank number 4, the people's champion, as our friend GM Jan Gustafsson said in the Chess 24 previews, which I also highly recommend. And Unibet odds for Grandmaster Grishuk are 12%.
Well, okay. I find Grishuk, you know, a fascinating player. He's kind of a compelling player. You never quite know what you're going to get with him. And that randomness, of course, is a lot of that is down to his time pressure. But his style of play as well, where he's striving so hard to achieve something from a position. But still, because he's a bit erratic, I find it hard to believe that, I mean, 12%, maybe that's low, I don't know. But I would put Geary's chances of winning better than Grishuk's.
Okay. Yeah, and again, I really enjoyed, in addition, I've been watching your preview, and I also enjoyed the series that Chess24 did where Grandmasters Laurent Frissonnet, Jan Gustafsson, and Peter Hein Nielsen discussed the players. And I found the one about Grishuk, of course, he's always an object of fascination to me, me and a lot of other chess players. And they just had some interesting insight about Peter Hein Nielsen was saying that Grandmaster Grishuk is really a sportsman, even as compared to the other players. So he might coast sometimes in some events, but then in the largest scale events, he really brings it and he goes all out to win. He takes chances if he needs to.
Well, that's very interesting, actually. Yeah, no, I get that. He's prepared to gamble in that way. I mean, yeah. He's a poker player, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Is he any good at poker?
Well, word on the street is he's amazing, is that he was world class. He as he does in chess, he kept a low profile, so he wasn't doing a lot of interviews. He tried to keep his online screen name under wraps, but he was quite a poker player from what Peter Svidler and others in the know have said.
Yeah. No, he's a funny guy, and I think he's kind of a bit of a one-off. You know, it's clear that he's slightly, how can I put it? Digital phobic.
Yeah.
You know, he barely knows how to operate a smartphone. He, you know, he hasn't got an online presence. It just doesn't interest him, basically. And I find that very appealing, frankly, as, you know, as a dinosaur myself.
I find it appealing as someone who can't put my phone down.
Well, that's true. I know the feeling. Yeah.
Okay, next up is Grandmaster Wang Hao, 30-year-old from China, rated 2762, number 12 in the world, and Unibet gives him 5% chances of winning the tournament.
Okay, again, I don't know what to make of the odds, but I really like Wang Hao as a person. He's a bit spaced out. He's kind of in his own world. He's got this sort of very nice, gentle humor. I remember chatting to him at a tournament a few years ago, and he said, oh, yeah, I've spent a fair bit of time in Japan. I really like manga. And he was he even writing something on manga or doing some kind of university study? Maybe I've got that completely wrong, but he's sort of, you know, interested in other cultures, and I find that interesting in itself. And he was almost kind of surprised when he qualified through the FIDE Grand Swiss tournament in the autumn. He really was taken by surprise. You know, when we were interviewing him afterwards, he said, oh, God, yeah, I guess I'll have to put a team together. Something like that. And something he said, oh, blimey, yeah, well, I have to. Well, he didn't say blimey, but
that would be funny.
He said, yeah, well, recently I've just been, I haven't really been concentrating on my chess. I've been, you know, teaching a few players. I have my pupils at home. It was like a total accident that he qualified. And that's incredible. You know, world rank number 12.
Yeah. video game enthusiast.
What kind of all things, you know, he's a bit of a Japanese-a-file.
Oh, is he?
Sorry?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I spent some time in Japan, and I believe he's been preparing there before the tournament.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's where they said he's coming from.
Yeah. So I just find that interesting that he's into different things apart from chess. And, you know, seems to be very phlegmatic. But when he clicks at the board, he is a fantastic calculator and attacker. He has a real instinct for attack. Now, how that works out against some of these top players, I don't know. You know, they've seen it all. But on his day, he locks and loads and just bang. He is amazing. He really is. And a really exciting player. So again, I think we have a player who's very unpredictable, actually.
Yeah, I agree. And he seems a little less invested than some of the players, which, you know, on the one hand can make it seem like, okay, he's not as dangerous. But on the other hand, it can be dangerous. It can be dangerous not to care as much.
Yes, certainly. I think, you know, a loose cannon, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah.
I find it hard to describe him as a loose cannon, considering his personality, because he's very gentle. He's a very nice guy. You know, a little bit shy, sort of very modest, just a very likable character, I have to say.
Yeah. So, yeah, I, you know, the more we talk about it, I really like this field. I mean, I know some people feel like it should just be players 2 through 9 in the world playing in the candidates, but I like the diversity.
Yes.
Okay.
Just coming back to Wang Hao, we should mention, of course, this is one of the two Chinese players in the tournament. And that in itself, I find really intriguing that suddenly, we'll get on to Ding in a second, but Ding played in the candidates in 2018. First Chinese player ever to do so. And now we've got two Chinese players. I mean, this really is an extraordinary achievement for these players, actually.
Yeah, and Ding Liren is actually next on the list. 27-year-old, also from China, as you say, rated 2805, number 3 in the world. From all interviews and everything I've heard, just an incredibly nice and likable guy, and a monster at the chessboard.
Yeah, very likable guy. But compared to Wang Hao, there is something very steely about Ding. Now, you know, he's very, when you hear him interviewed, he's very objective, very modest, but kind of he tells it as it is. You know, he's a different kind of animal to Wang Hao completely. And I find that contrast really interesting. I saw this interview on Chessbase India with Sagar Shah and Wang Hao, where they were asked about Wang Hao was asked about their relationship. And he said, Wang Hao, you know, very disarming. He said, I'm not really friends with him. Personally, as a chess professional, I don't find that particularly surprising. I think, you know, you can be colleagues. But then he said, after that was more interesting. He said, you know, when we play cards or something, Ding, he always wants to win.
Yeah,
he really cares about it. He said, I'm not bothered. And that says something about their personalities. You know, Ding is so determined, so, you know, he's ferocious. He fights. And I think, you know, if you think of that 100-game streak he had without losing, I think that says a lot about him. He is so determined.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, he is where he is in the world. And yes, number 2 seed in this tournament. But he has a very serious chance. Give me the odds.
Yeah, 28%.
28%. That sounds ludicrously low to me.
See, but you're doing the thing where, okay, I mean, you did sort of imply that maybe Grishuk is moderately, 12% might be a sell at 12%. But yeah, it's hard because it feels like everyone could win. But, and I have heard, you know, I've of course been talking to many strong players about this event leading up to it, and most people do seem to rate Ding slightly higher than 28%.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, you only could.
I was just going to say you could take Fabi and Ding at like 75% and or 73%, and then bet against the field. For those actually interested in gambling, but
okay,
no comment from Grandmaster King.
Well, it's the thought of I just don't really understand.
Yeah, so. I mean, I love this stuff, and honestly, I couldn't really find a bet. Nothing jumped out to me.
It seems to me that the best odds at the moment are kind of Geary at 8%.
Yeah.
Ludicrously low to me, but anyway.
Okay. And next up is 29-year-old Russian Grandmaster Jan Nepomniachtchi, number 5 in the world, rated 2774, and his chances are, according to Unibet, 11%.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to make of that. We've got another very unpredictable player who is, I almost feel that sometimes he's his own worst enemy. He often plays so quickly. He makes big decisions really, really quickly, which can sometimes blow players away. You know, no matter what their strength, we know, of course, that he's beaten Carlsen in the past. And he's a very interesting player to watch because he's dynamic. If you compare him with, let's say, Alexienko, who to me has a much more formal style, Nepo is prepared to play unorthodox moves. And that's what makes him very exciting, actually.
Yeah, if you could somehow average out the time management issues of Nepomniachtchi and Grishuk, and just make them both good time managers, you know, they kind of skew in the opposite directions. It'd be quite dangerous. But yeah, I mean, he's another one who, not the favorite for a reason, but hard to discount him. Although I should have known this, but I was surprised he's 29. He always strikes me as younger.
I don't know really. I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't really think of him like that. He's been around on the scene for a pretty long time. You know, his results for the Russian team are excellent.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's more erratic.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes in tournaments, he bombs out. He really does. So who knows? You know, it's a very long tournament. And you might find that, you know, someone maybe starts badly, but, you know, we saw in Berlin how people came and went and faded, and suddenly someone puts in a streak at the end. And so it's hard to rule anyone out, really. I'm probably contradicting myself all the way through this interview.
It's hard not to, yeah.
But I find it really difficult and also very exciting when you get these players that, you know, we don't quite know what we're going to get from them.
Yeah, I'm excited just talking about it. It makes me more excited for this tournament. I mean, chess history in the making. This is what we wait for. Mm. Only days away.
If I look at his results over 2019, so Zagreb Grand Chess Tour, 5.5 out of 11. Okay, nothing special. Dortmund 2019, 4 out of 7. Okay. Singfield Cup 2019, 5.5 out of 11. But if you look, lots of decisive games.
Right.
And that in itself it's a kind of, you know, randomizing theme. He's not afraid to really go for it.
Yeah. And, you know, I feel like momentum does exist in chess. Of course, there have been studies back and forth about to the extent that momentum exists in sports like basketball. But in chess, when you get ahead of steam, your confidence gets up and you start pressing a little more, and, you know, funny things can happen. But,
well, I think, you know, you see the momentum in all sports. I mean, the sports I'm really into, I'm really into football, that soccer, that is. And you see it in football all the time. Tennis, I've always thought that tennis, as it's a one-on-one sport, is a better comparison Or you can compare more easily with chess, actually, because you see that in the matches between the top guys, you know, Djokovic and Federer and Nadal and, well, Murray a few years ago. Those guys, their matches are incredible. And then that ebb and flow, and suddenly you see a player break and they crack. In fact, maybe it's more evident with one of those top guys and players who are a bit below them. And you see it somehow, you know, it gets into a third set or sometimes the fifth set decider, and a player breaks and they've just gone psychologically. And I think, you know, we see that happen in a game of chess as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I think part of I've noticed a lot of top chess players are fans of chess, including, I think, the last person we'll be discussing, Maxime Vachier-Legrave. Of course, late entrant, as we already discussed, 29-year-old from France, rated 2767, which is currently number 8 in the world, although, of course, he's been higher at times. And Unibet places his odds at 14%.
Okay.
I know what you're going to say.
Okay, what am I going to say?
It sounds like a buy, right? 14%, that seems low.
I just haven't got a clue by this stage. I really am. I mean, what I will say is that this is, it feels, okay, we're back to betting analogies, but it feels like a free roll to him, to me.
Yeah.
And I don't, because he's such a late entrant, hasn't had the time to prepare like the others, that actually a lot of the, you know, there's not so much pressure on him. It would be really surprising if he won. But, you know, there are, instances in sport of such things happening where a team has won through. Now, there's a famous one in football where in the European Championship, now, I think it was 92, I should be looking up online, I think it was 1992 in the European Championship, that because of the civil war in Yugoslavia, basically Yugoslavia withdrew from the European Championship. Football, I just want to remind everyone, this is football. And Denmark took their place. And Denmark ended up winning the tournament. Now, Denmark, a fine football team, but certainly not favourites to win the European Championship. And I think basically they went in with, I'm just looking it up now, they went in with absolutely no pressure on them and succeeded in winning. And yes, let me see. Yeah, they beat Germany 2-0 in the final. There we go. My memory didn't deceive me. So it can happen. And, well, Maxime is such a nice guy. If it did happen, you know, good luck to him.
Yeah. Of course, Peter Hein Nielsen himself, the strongest Danish chess player, immediately on Twitter when MVL was confirmed as a participant, mentioned this historic football comparison.
Mm.
And I think you mentioned in your video preview of Maxime Vachier-Legrave on Power Play Chess that he has a slightly more narrow repertoire.
Yeah, and that makes life interesting because, you know, if you play into, let's say, against his Neidorf or against the Grunfeld, you know you've got to roll your sleeves up and you know you're in for a fight and you better be well prepared. Otherwise, you could be in massive trouble. But then again, it makes it easier to target him. So it's really hard to call this one, how he's going to do. And often, you know, I found that, well, people will sidestep those main lines and, you know, dodge a big punch and try to catch him out that way. It's really hard. I remember, in fact, there was it was in Biel, I think it was in 2013, where I was commentating. And in fact, Etienne Bacot, who's one of Maxime's seconds, was playing. They were both playing in the tournament. And it was after one of the rounds. And I was chatting with Etienne, and he said, oh, I've got Maxime tomorrow. He said, he said, "Oh my God, I've got an evening to try and refute the Grunfeld." and you know, he just kind of shaking his head. He said, "I don't know what to do." You know, Maxim knows everything about the Grunfeld. Now, listen, for these guys, it's a bit different. But still, they have that dilemma. Do they play into supposedly one of his strengths, or do they avoid it? It's really hard to say.
Yeah, and I've seen some people saying, you know, he didn't have time to prepare. But I mean, that cuts both ways, because people haven't had time to prepare for him. And as you allude to, the fact that he has a more narrow repertoire probably means that he knows it, as you say, so well to begin with, that if he's going to venture it, I mean, he may be reasonably on top of the latest developments in the opening anyway. So, yeah, it'll be fun. Definitely an interesting wrinkle.
And, yeah, as I said, Maxime, he's a very likable character. You know, he's unassuming. He's got a nice sense of humor. And, well, it'll be great to have him in the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, each potential world championship challenger would be interesting in its own way, but I know Maxime seems to have a lot of fans amongst the elite in the world.
That's true, actually. That's interesting. You know, it's hard not to like him. You know, Magnus has in the past, you know, said that somehow, you know, they get on well. I think, you know, people get on with Maxime. He's you know, a very agreeable guy and just a really nice guy all around, actually.
Okay, well, we're out of participants, Daniel.
Okay. now you're gonna ask me who's gonna win.
Well, are you willing to venture? Will you make a prediction?
I'm afraid I'm just gonna be really, really boring.
Yeah. It's hard not to be.
Yeah, Fabi. He's the number one seed, but as I've had an education today in odds. he's got to be number one seed. Basically, he's got to be the favorite.
Yeah, tough to bet against him, even though there might be some good bets sprinkled in. And so you'll be announcing for FIDE with Grandmaster Judit Polgar and Grandmaster Evgeny Merashenko. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. So I'm heading off in a couple of days, and let's see what happens.
Excellent. Well, Daniel, I'm happy that you'll be covering it. Couldn't ask for a better announcer, and obviously so excited for this event.
Thanks very much.
Okay, thanks so much, Daniel. Safe travels, and we will be watching you.
Thank you. See you.
Thanks to everyone who helps make Perpetual Chess possible. That includes my producer, Matthew Passy, for his timely and capable editing, chessable.com for their generous support of the show. But I also want to thank everyone who helps spread the word about Perpetual Chess, whether it be by telling a friend, writing a positive review on Spotify or YouTube, or we could use some new reviews on Apple Podcasts. If you're enjoying the show, please write a quick review. It helps spread the word about Perpetual Chess. But most of all, I want to thank the people who support the show financially. People who donate via PayPal or Patreon really help me continue to sustain and grow Perpetual Chess. And those who donate more than $5 a month get their name or entity's name read on the outro. That's about to happen right now. So I would like to give special thanks to the following people and entities for their generous support of Perpetual Chess. They are Chessable.com, Quality Chess Books, The Capital City Chess Club, The Apprentice Twitch Channel, Andrew Bach, Austin Clough, Benjamin Porteau, Kathy Carr, Chad Oliver, Dan O'Hanlon, Danny Davidson, David Schreiber, I am Dimitri Schneider, Faraz Sawaf, Gary Foreman, Greg Natel, Greg Shahadi, Guven Manet, Jens Green, John Jernigan, John Rockefeller, John Cromarty, John MacArthur, Kelly Palmer, Kevin O'Callaghan, Lone Pine Chess, Lorraine DeRay, Lucio Casada Silva, The Law Offices of Stuart Katz, Michael Kahn, FM Michael Oblin, Mike Zelazny, Moonmaster 9000, Moonmaster, we need a question from you. Is everything okay? We need you to send in a listener question. Peter Soddy, Reuven Fisher, Seattle Chess Club, Thomas Donix, Thomas Tachenko, Todd Bryant of Strong Chess, and Todd Kennedy. I would also like to thank the following Rook level supporters. They include Aaron Wafflar, Ace Vallega, Adam Ralph of ChessEngland.com, Adrian Gutierrez, Alex Pejas, FM Andre Terikov, Andrew Perry, Aniti Deer, Better Chess Training, Bill Juniper, Bill Moran, Brad and Andy Rosen, Brett Howard Lynn, Brian Mullis, Chad Hilton, Dr. Charles Snodgrass, Chris Flanagan, Chris Wayne Scott, Christopher Baumgartner, Christopher Shabri, Chris Lott, Christopher Wood, I am Christoph Zalecki, aka Chess Explain, Coach J's Chess Academy, Courtney Fry, David Bleskachek, Daniel Gell, Daniel Ginsburg, Daniel Lucas of the U.S. Chess Federation, Daniel Naylor, Dave Saylor, David Cramley of Chessable.com, Dwayne Edmonds, Ethan Smith, I am elect or possibly not I am elect. I don't know if three norms makes him an I am elect. Donnie Ario, Fox Valley Chess Club, Francis Letart Lavoie, Frank Tortorice MD, Gary Andrews, Gary Lewis, Geert Vandervelt, Gerard Barta, Giovanni Russo, Hans Schut, Harish Srinivasan, Jacques Perry, James Aspinwall, James Bonastia, James Murr, Jason Anfang, Jason Woolham, Jaydeep Chakrabarty, Jeff Anderson, Jeffrey Martello, Jerry Wells, JJ Strnad, Dr. John Fallon, John Fernandez, John Fontaine, John Hartman, John Jeffrey, John McMurtry, Jordan Goodwin, Jose Rodriguez, Justin Gardner, WGM Jen Shahadi, Joel Rocky, John Thompson, GM Josh Friedel, I am Kare Christensen, WGM Katarina Nemsova, Kelly Palmer, I am Kostya Kovutsky, Krishna Gopala Krishnan, Larry Reifort, Laura Belyavsky, Martin Knudsen, Matthew Passy, Matthew Tedesco of SeattleChessMeetup.org, Mechanics Institute Chess Club of San Francisco, Michael Alerd, Miguel Arispide, Mike Clem, Mr. Mike Shahadi, Nate Salon, Neil Bruce, Olaf Mueller-Michaels, GM Pascal Charbonneau, Passy Passaman, Paul Bain, Paul Clarkson, Paul Sweeney, Paulo Santana, Peter Lux, Randy Temple, Ricky Grijalva, Richard Hallenbeck, Roy Yearwood, Ryan Berg, the Say Chess YouTube channel, Scott Doherty, Scott McKinnon, Sebastian Finsterwater, Stefan Roller, WGM Tatya Vabrahamian, Tim Brennan of TacticsTime.com, Tim Seymour, Timothy Ha, Tom Edsel, Tomas Komanich, Tony Rotella, Tyron Price, Wayne Beam, William Brock, William Juniper, William Hogarth, William Peterson, FM Zhao Jiang of Chess1000.com, and Zhivko Stoyanov. Thanks, as always, for listening and interacting with the Perpetual Chess community, and I will catch you guys next week. Podcast Network.